gains the trust of its citizens is by telling the truth. There is no other way, no shortcut.
And I call upon our government to open up like the Belgians have, the French have, the Brazilians have, the Argentines, the Mexicans have all released their files. It's about time now that we do the same thing and become a part of this planetary community.
It is way past time for all of us to know what our own government knows, instead of being kept in the dark by a policy of denial.
The last time the Congress held a hearing addressing the extraterrestrial issue was 1968, 44 years of sightings ago. In those 4.5 decades, hundreds of thousands of new sightings have taken place. Government agency witnesses have come forward. Media coverage has expanded. Hundreds of documentaries have been produced. Thousands of books have been written. And yet the United States Congress has remained silent. So for a period of 5 days, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., 2 blocks from the White House, 12 blocks from the Congress of the United States, we're going to conduct a citizen hearing on disclosure of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. 40 to 50 witnesses of high rank and station, from military, from agencies, possibly from intelligence services, along with the top researchers in the world, will give 30 hours of testimony to 5 former members of the United States Congress.
So maybe a citizen's hearing has a chance to try to leverage open some of the truth about the fact that we're not alone in this universe, that we might actually begin to look at what we really are, what the true history of this planet is, and that might be what gets us into a future without self-destruction.
The motto of the citizen hearing is, if Congress won't do its job, the people will.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable, Countdown to Disclosure. This is Beth. How are you doing today? Glad to see you here. Yesterday, we were talking a little bit about the citizens' hearing on disclosure and what an impact it had on accomplishing the event little D disclosure and setting us up for big D disclosure, which is defined as a head of state coming out publicly and announcing that we've had engagement with the extraterrestrial race. We're confident and hopeful that this will be President Obama and that he will go first. But if he doesn't, somebody else will. One of the most interesting things that came out of the citizens' hearing on disclosure was an interview that was filmed, and the witness was anonymous. And this interview was done by Richard Dolan and the film crew. And they played 15 minutes of 16 hours of tape they had taken. And I want to share more of the background with you about this interview before we run the interview here. And what was brought out in the interview was that this person had met and interviewed an extraterrestrial at Area 51. So I want to talk more about that tomorrow and in the days to come. What I want to share with you today is something similar. And this will give you some background information to what happened at the citizens' hearing. First, I want to say the name of this website. I'm going to be putting this on Galactic Roundtable and promoting it. The name of this website where this interview comes from, this other interview, is Area51JRod.com. Area51JROD.com. There is amazing information at this website, and I know you will enjoy it, so please go browse there. For now, I'm going to bring up this YouTube interview of Ron Garner, and he will explain more about these extraterrestrial biological entities that we've been holding captive for 50 or 60 years. These ones are said to have a lifetime of 800 or 900 years, but I would think it's about time that we liberate them and let them go home. So listen to this. Enjoy.
Just at the super secret S4 facility inside Area 51 in Nevada, he was ordered to take hundreds of tissue and DNA samples from a live EB. By the way, EB is short for extraterrestrial biological entity, in order to diagnose and treat a neuropathy that left the being greatly weakened.
And tonight's first-time guest, Ron Garner, is helping Dan reveal what he knows about those secrets. This is not an X-Files story. It's an amazing true story destined for the history books.
It's going to be good. So here are the first of many clips tonight of an interview in preparation for disclosure. Let's meet Dr. Dan Burrish.
Initially, I was briefed that J-Rod was an alien, specifically from the reticulum system to reticulum 4. I had no idea the truth. Yes, from 2 reticulum 4 now, but I had no idea the truth of how they came to be. As I said to you before, I have never met an alien, but I have met an extraterrestrial.
Ron Garner has been a UFO and paranormal researcher for over 30 years and is the co-owner of the original UFO Enigma Museum in Roswell, New Mexico.
I think we've been there.
We
He's
have.
Written 3 books and numerous articles about the Dan Burrish story and joins us tonight to help us understand what could be one of the most important revelations ever to come out of secret government research at Area 51.
Welcome, Ron.
Hello, Kate and Richard. Glad to be with you this evening.
Thank you. Now, listen, in that first clip we just aired, Dan says he's never met an alien, but he has met an extraterrestrial. What is the difference?
Well, the difference, and this is the key to understanding this whole field, is that these beings are able to travel in time. When we see all these UFOs flying around, they're actually flying time machines. So this being, this code name J-Rod, his personal name is Kala, with a hard K, is from the Zeta Reticuli star system, and from what Dan has told me and what other people that I researched, that this person is a future human. So the genome of the J-Rod, which I have detailed on my website, he is very similar to normal humans present today. Now, an alien, on the other hand, would be someone or some being from another star system that had no linkage to the human race. And one example, I don't know if I gave it to you or not, is the Varginha case in Brazil that I visited 4 years ago with Roger Lear. Now, that was a true alien. And my plan is to get the genome of that being in Brazil and compare it to the J-Rod. And that's high on my agenda.
Now, Ron, we have a picture of that Brazilian one. That's the one with the reddish eyes as opposed to the black eyes.
That's reddish eyes.
I have a question for you, though. Dr. Dan Burrish has come out and said all this stuff about his involvement with this EV. I mean, it's a wonder this guy hasn't been taken out or killed.
I know. That's what my concern was in the beginning. I had my car broken into 3 times and tape stolen and so forth. But when it started leaking out, there's just too many people that knew about it. So my information is that the Majestic Organization took a vote in April of 2005. It was 6-5 for disclosure. In September of 2005, it was 8-3 for disclosure. So Majestic is behind this, reluctantly, I admit, but they want this out, and for whatever reason, Dan Burrish Crane, that's his given name at birth, is the poster boy for disclosure, and for another strange reason, I'm the media person that's supposed to make it happen. So
right.
Scoop on everybody, to both of you tonight.
All right, listen, we've only got 2.5 minutes before our first break, but let's backtrack a little bit for our viewers and tell people who this alien or guy, this extraterrestrial was. How did Dan Burrish
get a hold of him?
How did Area 51 get a hold of this ET?
He crashed in Arizona, near Kingman, Arizona, in 1953. There were four beings on the ship, and three of them were taken to Los Alamos, and this J-Rod was taken to Area 51. And as a journalist, which is what I consider myself, I have to have at least two or three sources. So I have three sources on this. I have Bill Uhouse, who was working at Los Alamos building a device to teach our pilots how to fly these vehicles called the ARV, Alien Reproduction Vehicle. I've interviewed him and his family in depth, and he said that we have these being that the three were taken to Los Alamos and one was taken to Area 51. They had to take it through a back road across a bridge because the UFO could not be tipped, so they had to put it on a flatbed truck and take it across the Colorado River, way into Area 51.
Okay, so it went into to Area 51. Now,
how long ago was this?
So 1953. How did Dan get involved in this, though?
Well, he was brought into it formally in 1991. They were testing him and teaching him microbiology because they identified him when he was just a child. Now, this is a big part of the story that most people don't understand, is that the ET people, because they are time travelers, they can see the past and the future. Now, they have a device that they've given us that our military right now is using right now in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is my personal opinion, but it's very well informed. They can see with this device, it's called the Yellow Book, they can see the past and the future. So they can see that this young man, I met Dan when he was only 38 years old, 8 years ago, and they recognized that he had the talent because he was abducted, taken aboard the ship when he was 9 years old, right here in Southern California, near Whittier in Lakewood. He was taken on board the ship, and the J-Rod that he was eventually going to meet 20-some years later was on board the ship when he was taken from that ballpark when he was playing ball with his grandfather.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. 9 years old. So that they knew back then that because they were in the future. Amazing. We're going to have to take a break, Ron. When we come back, we have another clip and we'll learn what was wrong with this poor J-Rod. We'll be right back.
Had regular systematic medicals by a physician. Following that, we would be suited. Well, we would be catheterized, plugged, and suited. Communication apparatus was placed on our heads. We had a cooling system set up. It was, for all intents and purposes, it was a space suit. It was a total encapsulated suit, something like what you would find in an NASA facility. We were suited up, we were pressurized, and then walked with our cooling system and our hosing down a ramp into the ambassadorial suite. He was held actually below ambassadorial suite level, and that was raised up as needed. What they did with him down there, he didn't say, and they didn't tell me. It was not a need-to-know issue. Apparently, they dealt with the cleaning of the sphere and all of that down there, the regular housed animal maintenance. As they treated him.
Okay, we're on the phone with Ron Garner. And listen, Ron, it sounds pretty complicated. We just aired that clip of Dan's talking about how they had to be so careful when they met with the J-Rod. What other protocols were involved in there? How about communication? How did they speak to each other?
Yeah. It was all through telepathy, and that was a key point of why they allowed Dan to be the lead microbiologist at Area 51. He was moved into that place when he was junior in years and in seniority working with the secret government. So because he had this telepathic connection with the J-Rod from when he was abducted when he was 9 years old. So they would debrief him after he talked to the J-Rod And he wouldn't always tell him everything that J-Rod told him.
Right.
And that's a whole another story in itself.
Hey, Ron,
it was all through telepathy.
Do you know Dan Sherman by any chance?
I've read his material, yes.
Yeah, he was on our show probably 9 years ago, and he said the same thing, that he was locked up in a room, and he was able to communicate telepathically with a being. And he only told his superiors half of what the being
That's
told
right.
him.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I know, Dad said the same thing.
Right.
So, now, who all was involved in this? You say Majestic 12, but who's this other? This is Mike McConnell. What does he have to do with it?
Well, this is a scoop for your show, and nobody knows this, but McConnell was formerly head of Majestic 12 until 06 or 05. And he's the reason, in my informed opinion, that Dan Burries is alive, because these other over 40 microbiologists have met untimely deaths, but Dan Burries, Crane, is alive because of McConnell.
That's
McConnell
right.
is like his godfather, and he was director of national intelligence for President Bush and left office then. And I have an actual letter from him. It's not signed. I know Stanton Friedman would be upset because it's not signed, but I know that it's from him, where he explains why Dan was chosen, why Bob Lazar was chosen, why all this happened in 1989. So this is a scoop for you guys. I won't tell who the other 11 are. That'll come later.
Thank you.
But at some point, we need to approach Admiral McConnell and ask him. He may not respond, but I think he will.
Well, Ron,
because this
Dan Burrish may be alive and is alive today, but there have been dozens and dozens of other microbiologists who have disappeared mysteriously. That's a fact.
Or died, absolutely. Uh-huh. So you think that this Mike McConnell is the reason Dan's still kicking. But what about the others of this Majestic 12? You said that it was a 5-3 vote in September of some year recently.
April of 05.
April of 05. So,
and for whatever reason, when they vote, there's always one abstention. So the first vote was 6-5 for disclosure, and in September of 05 it was 8-3. It has something to do with the protocols of the Freemasons.
What?
That's a whole other discussion, but there's one that doesn't vote.
Protocols of the Freemasons.
They want this out, and I know who they all are. I can out them at the right time, and you will be amazed. They're almost all of them. They're familiar names. You know everybody. It's a part of Majestic.
Okay, so now during the break, we were just briefly talking about this whole idea of the television series V.
Right.
Do you think that's another way of getting this information out?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, they use fear. That's part of what the controlling groups want to do, is make people fearful. I think about 80% of the extraterrestrials are just fine, and they're here to help us. There's maybe 15-20% that are not so good, but they're not so evil as depicted in V last night.
Yeah, that's a terrible, scary concept that they have there. And they get into vaccines and everything else there.
The thing is, but maybe there's another kind of extraterrestrial roaming around, Ron. Not the good guys.
Yeah, I think there is. And I want to put this in here right now, because this is really important. The James Cameron movie is the Stan Burries story in reverse. The J-Rod and his fellow brothers came here to help us, where in Avatar, we went there to affect them. So at some point, I want to get this information to James Cameron, because for whatever reason, he's been inspired to do this wonderful movie, Avatar, which I think is just a wonderful movie.
Oh, yes.
Well, listen,
this is directly opposite of that. They come here, and I can prove it. I have documentation.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, Ron, we're on the air here in Los Angeles, so maybe he's watching tonight.
Okay, now listen, we're going to have to take for a break, but when we come back, you do have many people who can independently corroborate Dan Burrish's story. And we have a clip from Bob Lazar coming up, and why the J-Rod sacrificed to come back here and submit to these terrible tests. We'll be right back with Ron Garner.
It's a sloped building that's up, butt up against the side of a mountain. The hangar doors on the outside have sand on them, like it was glued on, and it's just a texture. And I don't know if that's to prevent satellite photographs, anyone from guessing what it is, but when I got out of the bus, I ran my hand on it, and I said, boy, this is really weird. And the hangar doors are diagonal about a 45-degree slope, and they open like that. It looked really neat. It looked like something in a James Bond set.
But, I mean, this is a... How would you describe the complex? Large, elaborate?
Fairly large. I don't think I was... I was through more than 25% of it, really.
You didn't get to see very much. They kept you in one kind of area.
Yeah.
How many people did you work with? I mean, how many people might have been doing the same thing as you?
I couldn't even guess. I knew 2, 3, 4 people. That's about it.
You said it's very compartmentalized. I'm trying to figure out how many people might have had the big picture or who.
I don't know if anybody had the big picture.
All right, we're back. This is the DVD, Alien Disclosure at Area 51, produced by our guest, Ron Garner.
Ron, this Bob Lazar that we just aired a clip from him, who is he for the people who don't know?
Well, Bob Lazar is key to this story in many ways. He was a physicist, and he was recruited to work at Area 51 in 1988. And my information was that the secret government was going to bring out this information in the 80s. Linda Howe is a good friend of mine, and she was contacted by Air Force Intelligence and was told in 1983 that she could do a documentary and they would supply footage, and she had contracts pending with HBO. So this was supposed to come out, and it's a long story why it's been delayed this long, but McConnell in his letter to me says that they tried Bob Lazar and they felt that he was kind of person that they would test. They didn't know for sure if he could keep quiet or not, and at the same time, they were recruiting Dan Burrish. So at that time, this is 89-90 time frame. So Dan Burrish did what Majestic told him, but Bob Lazar sort of went off the reservation.
Right.
So they had to take him out. But he actually was there. He worked on the alien reproduction vehicles and the other craft that were at Area 51. There were 9 hangars, and he hung upside down in one of them and saw the reactors that was the motivating force, and it changes gravity. And that's a big part of this whole story is anti-gravity.
Ron, where is Bob Lazar today? Any idea?
He moved to Michigan about 9 months ago.
He had a
story.
He was
in Mexico.
When he first started at the S-4 facility, he was walking by what he thought to be an alien spacecraft, and when somebody wasn't looking, he stuck his hand through the skin of the craft. Is that a true story?
I've never heard that part, but I can tell you another interesting story. It's in one of my videos. I interviewed John Lear about this. And by the way, John Lear totally supports the Dan Burrish crane story 100% because it dovetails with what he knows about Bob Lazar. And John Lear told me that Bob Lazar took a small camera, one of these little tiny cameras, in there to take a picture of in there to prove that he was there. And he slipped it into the leg of a chair and then never went back to get it. But this is a big part of the story. Lazar was only there for 3.5 months. Dan Burry's crane worked there on and off for over 10 years. So it's a big difference there.
Sure.
But John Lear, who I trust totally with this story, says that Lazar was there. He was there, and I can go into great detail about Bob Lazar. But Bob Lazar and Dan Burrish have never met. On my long list of things to do, I want them to get together, and because they will support each other.
Right,
they both saw the same thing.
Now, the clip we aired was from an interview that George Knapp from Las Vegas' KLAS, that he did an interview, and it seems that George pretty well supported and got behind Bob's story, but for some reason there's a difference with the Dan Burrish story. What's that?
Well, I can tell you what happened there. That goes back to what I was saying. When Dan Crane at that time organize what they call Horizon 90 in Las Vegas.
I'm just going to check something. Hold on.
Yes, he did an interview, and it seems that George pretty well supported and got behind Bob's story, but for some reason there's a difference with the Dan Burrish story. How? What's that?
Well, I can tell you what happened there. That was goes back to what I was saying when Dan Crane at that time organized what they call Horizon 90 in Las Vegas and even had Carl Sagan come because Carl Sagan was a part of Majestic, not the formal Majestic, but some of the subset of Majestic. And when Dan organized this, he was there, and the story about Bob Lazar had come out, but the Dan Crane story had not come out. So someone on the inside leaked the information to George Knapp that Dan Crane had the same experience as Bob Lazar. So when George Knapp came to that meeting, he met Dan in the hallway or something and asked him, and then Dan was evasive and told a little fib and, well, I didn't, and so on and so forth. So that put George Knapp,
got it.
You know, bent him out of shape, rubbed him the wrong way.
So now there's a difference forever.
Dan Crane's ex-wife made some nasty things. Said some nasty things about George on the internet and went downhill from there.
Got it. Rob, I talked to George.
We have to take a break.
George has been a guest on this show and a great guy. We need to get to a commercial break. Here's the DVD, Alien Disclosure, Area 51. Our guest is Ron Garner. When we come back, more from the super secret installation at Area 51 and why the extraterrestrial was so sad.
Welcome back to Matrix TV. There's still so much more to come with documentary filmmaker Ron Garner, co-owner of the original UFO Enigma Museum in Roswell, New Mexico.
Yep, and we're going to continue with the story of how one government microbiologist was interacting on a daily basis with an extraterrestrial being for over 2 years at the super secret S4 facility inside Area 51.
And we're back with Ron after this very revealing video.
He was hunched over most of the time, could not support himself fully, given muscular atrophy. And that had to do with the peripheral neuropathy by which he was suffering. So he would grunt and move toward me almost in a flopping fashion. Feet were large in comparison to what we would say our feet would be. How many toes unclothed for?
Four.
And he was unclothed, which bothered him. He wanted to wear clothing, called himself captive, and justifiably so.
So, Ron, why was the extraterrestrial J-Rod so sad?
Well, he was sad because he missed his wife and family, his mother-in-law and his child that was back on Zeta Reticuli.
Now, there's something you just don't think about.
Really?
Yeah.
He was sad because he missed his family, as we would be.
Sure, we would too, of course. And he was sick. Yeah. What exactly was wrong with him? Dan says something about a neuropathy. What exactly was going on?
Yeah, neuropathy is a disease. It's very a painful disease. A friend of mine has had it and told me how painful it is. And what this part of this story, and this is gets a little arcane, but I'll try and do it briefly, is that when they make an adjustment, coming back here and make an adjustment, in this case to the genome, then that helps heal us in the future. Because if this had been healed, then in a different timeline, then we will not get this disease in the future.
Right.
So in a sense, the J-Rod is the sacrificial lamb. He came here voluntarily to have this genome changed. Now, Danny and his microbiologist friends did not completely heal it, but they did heal it somewhat. So that will affect the timeline.
That is so bizarre to me. It's one of those things
that's
where you
really
just,
bizarre.
When you go back in time, and if you do affect so that, though, what else are you messing with, you know?
Well, that's what Danny calls it, and it's a formal name, convergent timeline paradox. you know, we're talking here on the phone now in March of 2010, but there's another part of us that's in another parallel universe. So I know this is hard to understand, but on Coast to Coast last month, this Anderson Institute, your listeners or viewers should check that out, in New Mexico, has a device which is very similar to what I mentioned earlier in this interview, that you can go there and you can see the future and the past. You can dial the future and the past right now if you go to the Anderson Institute in northern New Mexico.
Wow.
So, Ron, do you believe that we are in parallel universes? You think they really exist?
Absolutely.
I do, too.
That's what a deja vu experience is. If you've ever experienced
many
deja vu,
times.
That's a time slip.
Yes.
And you're seeing something that just happened or that will happen. It could go either way.
So I wonder if we, in fact, are living ourselves in another parallel universe.
Yeah, sure we are.
I think that's a strong possibility, yes, that there we have multiple selves. And another thing that happens that most people hear about, especially on Coast to Coast and paranormal things, George Knapp, Skinwalker Ranch, if you know about that story.
Yeah, we had him on the show.
So he was talking about how these beings were coming and going. They had cameras. Whenever they would focus the camera in a certain direction, then whatever the paranormal event would be on the opposite side of the camera. So they had consciousness.
Sure.
And you have the Mothman prophecies. You have Bigfoot. You have all these other beings that from other dimensions that slip over from time to time. That's why they can never actually get a hold of one.
Right.
Brad Steiger is a good friend of mine. He's written many books.
Yes.
About this,
so yeah. We had Brad on the show a long time ago. Now,
you go ahead, Kim.
We have a sketch here of the J-Rod, and it looks like he's attacking Dan, but that wasn't really what happened. What was going on there?
Yeah, what was happening, Dan had been visiting the J-Rod, taking these tissue samples for 2 years, 94 and 95. At the end of 95, for the first time in 2 years, the J-Rod, in kind of a joke, made a move toward Danny in his totally encapsulated suit. This surprised Danny. He stepped back, caught his heel, and fell back on his backpack. And the J-Rod sort of loped over there and crawled. He didn't jump on him. He crawled up on his chest, looked deeply into his eyes, and downloaded all of this information into him,
Holy God. Is
what I have 100 hours a video of him explaining all this information that the J-Rod downloaded into him.
What kind of information are we talking about?
So it was a friendly thing, but Danny had two modes of communication. One was to the security and one was to the scientists. So he was saying no, no, no to the scientists because they could ramp up the pressure in the clean sphere and hurt the J-Rod.
Oh, no.
But they thought he was saying no, no, no to the J-Rod. So they had to get the other people suited up. It took them a half an hour get suited up the other microbiologists to get in and drag Dan out.
So you said that the J-Rod was
for about 24 hours after that.
Ron, you said that the J-Rod was downloading information to Dan Burrish. Did we ever know what kind of information or what the information was?
Yes, he wrote a whole book about it, about Mars, and that's where we're going, to Mars. I know Obama doesn't want to, but we're going there, whatever Obama says, and we're going to have set up colonies on Mars. And so Dan wrote a whole book about it in 1996.
Sure.
And that's why he was censured for his PhD. He got his PhD in SUNY New York, and people that I know called there and said, yes, he graduated.
Yeah.
But when he published this book that the Majestic didn't like, they had his PhD erased from SUNY. But I have other documentation that proves that he does have a PhD.
Wow.
All right, Ron, stand by with us. Our guest tonight is Ron Garner. When we come back, more corroboration about the super secret installations throughout the United States. Be right back.
If everybody here has seen Bob Lazar's poster, that's the closest thing you'll see until you see the real one of a flying disc. Anyway, there's also some question on Grays. And you noticed, you know, I see all these various different suits and all that. They wore a shirt and a pair of pants. Their shoes were a little different, but then I just did this about 3 weeks ago. This guy's name is J-Rod. Imagine that. J-A-R-O-D. That's a translation for whatever, you know, they had given the translators at the facility that I worked at. There's a lot of linguists. There's so many people involved in this whole particular project. It's just insurmountable. One of the things I wanted to say and bring out, that the reason why everybody talks about the government's not going to do this, the government's not going to do that. Well, let me tell you guys something. That's the government, you know. There are little countries in this country. You got one not so far from here. It's part of Area 51, but that a portion of that facility is a separate country, and that is not the government. That's a separate entity in its own.
Okay, we're back with Ron. Listen, we just heard this clip from this Bill Uhouse, and you mentioned him earlier on in the interview, but what did he do? What did he exactly do? Was he at Area 51 or only in New Mexico?
Oh, no, he was at Area 51. Oh. And I've interviewed his son, Will Uhouse, for 4 hours. And Bill just passed away May of last year. And I'm told that his son got some a cache of information from his father that he will share at the right time. Well, Bill Uhouse, I first met him at a conference, UFO conference in Las Vegas in 93, and then other people that I know interviewed him. I have about 3 or 4 hours of video and audio of him. You played some of it there. But he was a Marine pilot in World War II, and he worked at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and then they recruited him to work with the extraterrestrial people. And he tells in my video how, and this is just pure logic, that he was tested to see if he could deal with working with extraterrestrial people. A lot of people can't. And that's another big story that ufology doesn't understand, that the one of the reasons for disclosure is the ET or people are fed up with talking to second and third tier people. The really sharp scientists, Dan's an exception, but the really sharp scientists are not going to work in those conditions of secrecy.
Yeah.
And no matter how much they get paid. So Bill Uhouse, they tested him, and he passed the test with flying colors. He says it on my video. So he was able to work with the extraterrestrial. The extraterrestrial was an engineer. He was, when they were building the simulator to teach our pilots how to fly the UFOs, Bill Uhouse would ask the ET scientist, where does this go? What's the calculation? And the ET person, the engineer ET person, would say, no, do it this way and do it that way.
Amazing. And that is just too incredible. What really got me about Bill's clip was that he says there are separate countries.
Yeah, this is fascinating.
Within the country. What does that mean?
You mean within our country? Well,
in our country, at the Area 51, it's a separate country. It's just like an Indian reservation.
Oh, okay.
They don't go by our laws. That's why the president can't go there. That's why in the movie Independence Day, I don't know if you knew the backstory on Independence Day, when they first talked to the military and Air Force about doing, oh, yeah, we'll help you. But when they said they're going to have Area 51, the Army cut everything. So the people that made Independence Day had to use National Guard troops instead of the Army. They wouldn't cooperate because it's super secret, Area 51. That's why my site, Area 51 Disclosure, is so important, because I'm going to explore all these things that nobody knows about.
So you're saying that Area 51...
I'm still here and still standing, and you guys will know a lot more than anybody else.
Ron, so you're saying that Area 51 is a separate country within the United States.
Part of it is. And that's why they can get away with...
Part of it is, right.
That's why they get away with burning waste and doing the testing. That's probably why. Now, Richard wanted to get to a question about the J-Rod.
Right. I need to ask you this. So we've been talking about the J-Rod and how it interacted with Dan and downloaded information to him. Is the J-Rod still there at the facility, or what happened?
No, they allowed him to go back home in 2003. And through a certain portal that was in the area of Egypt. I can't go into more detail now. But the Stargate, that's why my company is called Stargate, because that's what I've been told, that we're all going to be going through the Stargate at some point or another, and the movie was based on pretty much a true thing, and we know how to open these stargates.
Wow.
I want to get one other quick thing in here.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I talked to some very high-level people in the Air Force and other insiders, and I said, well, what percentage of all these sightings are ours, and what percentage are theirs? And all three people who didn't know each other, they said it's about 70-plus percent are ours.
Wow.
Now, I would have never thought that. I thought it would be the opposite.
But yeah.
These people are very high level. So a lot of these sightings are our pilots, you know, flying around. Now, whatever, and there's some other pilots, especially from Germany, and that's a whole other discussion about paperclips.
Ron, hang on with us. We have one final commercial break. When we come back, are there dire messages that we should be paying attention to, and what does it have to do with any coming events in 2012. Be right back with Ron Garner.
This gets me thinking. The one thing that we've heard from the Brookings Institution study, the famous Clamp study, was this would cause a great social upheaval. It would destroy our social bonds, our religious bonds. Every time an individual is approached with the issue of, would this destroy your faith? I have heard, this is my experience only, I'm sure there are going to be varied opinions, it would strengthen it. From a certain perspective, yes. From another perspective, no. The Brookings Institution was correct on a certain level. Suspend disbelief for a moment and walk with the idea that this is real, that the ruins that are present on the moon and on Mars, the ancient temples, are in fact, the gifts of our own progeny.
And we're back with Ron Garner. Ron, we just had a kind of a poignant clip there from Dan. What is going on in terms of the future? Did he learn something from the J-Rod that we need to be concerned about?
Yes, it's something that we need to be concerned about, but especially on the spiritual level. Because what Dan explained to me on my camera is that in 2012, our solar system passes through the plane of the galactic plane. It's like a hobby horse. It's going up and down. And when it passes that plane, it has something to do with, not radiation per se, but it has something to do with our spirituality. And we need to get more meditation. I meditate my whole life. And we need to develop our spirituality. If we don't, then some of us split off and become J-Rods. Another group splits off and becomes the Orions, which are the blonde, blue-eyed ones that a lot of people know about. And there's some subset of those. But the key element in 2012, and it's not 2012 on December, it could be a little before that or could be after that. Danny says that that has been moved back to 2015 now.
Hmm.
And some other sources say it's 20-something. But I think 15, 16 is more of a critical time than 12, from my information.
So
we need to get our act together spiritually. That's the key. That's what the J-Rod and what these other beings have told our secret government.
We have
to develop ourselves and love and peace and take care of each other. That's what it's all about.
Right.
Well, good trying. Now, one question also, we were talking during the break about these secret little countries within the bases. What is it about the guards?
Yeah, the difference is that Area 51 proper is a military base, but 10 miles southwest is S4. That's where all the hot stuff, the super secret stuff. That's where Dan Burrish was. That's where Bill Uhouse was. That's where, all of the super secret things were.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, that's the part that's, in my humble, informed opinion, is what they're talking about is a secret country on its own. It has its own laws. I think that there may even be an administrative building built into the mountain, Papoose Mountain there, where you have ET sitting around watching computers.
Oh, jeez. That's so hard for the mind.
No, just that reminds me of MIB. I mean, it's probably that.
Okay, where would you like to see this go, Ron? What can people do if they're interested in this? Do you want to make a movie or what?
Yeah, I want to make a feature film on a par with what James Cameron's done, and I think that this is something that can be done. I'm having a meeting with Jesse Ventura next week, and other people in Hollywood have this story at low levels. It hasn't been developed yet.
Right. Well, that's the goal.
It's going to be the biggest story in history. I mean, this is...
I agree with you. I agree.
Ron, we need to say goodnight. Give us your website, your new website, quickly.
It's area51disclosure.com. It just went up today for the first time.
Area51disclosure.com. Ron, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate
good night, Ron.
You're welcome.
All right, see you around, my friend. When we come back, we'll tell you how to subscribe to our streaming video service. Stay with us.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. That was some new information that I haven't seen out there a whole lot. I know I have more to bring you. That was just the beginning. So the website he just gave has changed, and this is the website where you can go see more information about this. Area 51. On JROD.com. Tomorrow what I'd like to do is talk more about the things that the witnesses have said. They've seen it at S4, at Area 51, and how that information links into the Hollow Earth, Admiral Byrd, the Navy, and what the Nazis were doing since the 1930s with these crafts, and how it relates to Adolf Hitler and his daughter Angela Merkel and his granddaughter Hillary Clinton, Angela through Eva von Braun and Hillary through a mistress that in her, and how all these things are connected to what's going on economically in this world today with what Richard Dolan calls the breakaway society. Okay, everybody, what I'd like to do now is let's move on to doing a meditation together, okay? Here we go.
Greetings, everybody. This is Beth from Galactic Roundtable. We are doing a rainbow guided meditation. Relax in the usual manner, sitting comfortably in a chair, feet on the floor, your back straight, hands loosely in your lap. Focus on the rhythm of your breathing for a few moments and feel your body relax more with each outgoing breath as you release all the tensions and stresses of the day. Close your eyes gently and imagine before you a most beautiful rainbow. Observe the brilliance and clarity of the colors as they vibrate before you. Now, allow one of these colors to become brighter and more noticeable, and gently place it above your head. Yes, you can do that. This may be your favorite color or not. Try not to analyze why this color presents itself to you. As your color vibrates above your head, visualize it turning into a liquid light which is slowly flowing down towards you. Now, let the color flow into your head. It is a good and comfortable feeling, soothing and healing, bringing much peacefulness. Feel it flow through your head and face, easing all nerves and cells it touches. Allow yourself to enjoy the peaceful feeling it brings as it washes away all tightness and tension in your face. Your whole head is filled with the radiant aura of your color. Now let the color wash down through your neck, into your shoulders and arms. It is getting brighter and richer as it moves and flows through your body. Feel the aliveness of this energy in your upper body. Feel it move and circulate through your inner organs, leaving them fresh and vibrant and healthy. This is a very powerful yet gentle energy which quietly fills all your muscles and cells. It is now cascading through your abdomen and hips and flowing down into your legs. Imagine your legs to be open channels filled with the circulating power of your color. It is an easy, light, and satisfied feeling that has washed away any stress you started with, leaving you fresh, free, and open. Finally, let the liquid light flow out through the bottom of your feet, as though you are providing an outlet for the light to continue flowing. You are a channel filled with light. Every part of you is open and breathing peacefully. Now, something remarkable is happening. As the light pours out of your feet, it is returning to the top of your head, recycling itself in a marvelous circle of light, which has one purpose only: to bring healing energy to your body and mind, affecting you on every level. Let it happen. Experience all it brings you. Slowly, let your friend, your color, begin to leave you. It has done its work well. Gradually feel it leaving your head, your shoulders, your torso, abdomen, and back, finally departing from your hips and gently leaving your legs. Let it pour out of your feet and see it return to the ocean of rainbow light. Slowly become aware of your surroundings again, bringing with you the powerful energy you have experienced.
Very good. So just let you know, everybody, what I'm working on now. I had begun the transcripts for the citizens' hearing inside the room. I typed all the sessions up each day. They need to be proofed and edited. I'm working on that now. I was to release two books in April, and those were postponed because of all the traveling. And I'll begin finishing the one, which is just about almost complete, and then I'll finish the other by the end of May. I'm working on those things. I believe the one book will be posted on the internet to be read, the chapters, and I'll finish posting Stargate Earth on the internet. The purpose is just that they should be read by anyone who wants to read them, and the information needs to get out there. And, you know, of course I'll put it on Amazon for anyone who wants to buy the book, to have the book, you know. And then, so I know many people must be asking, well, what's next? How do we get to the big D? And the way it feels to me, in my experience and what I've seen, is that disclosures to me, it feels like disclosure is done. You know, it feels like everything that we've been asked to do, we've produced. We did the hard work. The key players came together. The testimony was given. And now, whatever comes now, it's more information that will be pouring out, more documentation. We had always been told that at the time of announcements, there would be a minimum of 72 hours where it would be broadcast on TV all the things that have come to pass. I know that will still be true, of course, because when disclosure happens, there will be a need for all the citizens of Earth to have information disseminated about what exactly is happening here. We know that years ago, the major journalists who we watch every day on TV were taken for 6 weeks and briefed on this information and trained what to do, and that they already have specials produced that they'll be releasing after disclosure that will explain everything to everybody. That's already in place. We don't have to worry that there's going to be mass confusion because the explanations are already produced and ready to go. So as we come on this radio station every day and we share more information, we educate ourselves, we get these YouTubes and put them into emails, share them with our friends and family, we're causing disclosure to spill out over the earth. And we're going through the process as earthlings of understanding the wholeness that we are. So we continue to do that and raise our vibrations. We'll talk more about consciousness and the things will be to come after disclosure, which is a lot. And I'll be sharing those things with you here. One thing that we should all contemplate is what I call objectionless joy. What it means is that if you set limitations on your joy by saying, if I accomplish a goal, that will bring me joy. If I'm able to possess a certain thing, that will cause me joy. That kind of joy is temporary. It's what I call small joy. And that joy is always squashed by pain, you know, by disappointment. When we're in the little joy, then, and someone brings us up, it would be like we would say to them, hey, don't harsh my buzz, man. I'm in my joy. But as soon as something comes to pass, your boss yells at you, or you know, you get to the grocery store and what you wanted isn't there. Anything when you're in little joy can knock you off of little joy into despair, pain, especially with relationships. Objectionless joy means that you strive to be joyous all the time, no matter what. Nothing can knock you off of your bliss or your joy because it's inherent to who you are, and you have mastered being there all the time. And you go to neutrality and don't react to anything that happens to you on the outer. These are the things I'd like to talk more about with you. So please come back tomorrow. We're going to explore Hollow Earth then, and the other things that kept us in secrecy about the extraterrestrial issue for so long. Have a wonderful day. I hope to see you here tomorrow. Namaste.